Hi, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of One Health, One Community. Our next guest, Dr. Brandt, is an assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and the Environment in the Center for Environmental Science and Engineering at UConn. She earned her Master's of Health Science degree from Johns Hopkins University and her PhD from Duke University. I'm excited to hear more about her connection to environmental health specifically and One Health in general. Thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Brandt. I'm so excited to get your take on One Health and hear a little bit more about your classes and research in relation to One Health.
Thank you for inviting me on the show.
So my first question that I wanted to ask you was, what does One Health mean to you?
I think that's a great question because everyone brings a unique lens to this topic. My background is in environmental and ecotoxicology, so I think about One Health mostly in the context of contaminants. Contaminants from all types of sources are ending up in the environment where we know that they can interfere with how ecosystems function, and they can also threaten animal health, including people's health. Because we're mostly responsible for those waste streams, we're also obligated to protect the environment from their consequences. And in doing so, a co-benefit of that is protecting our health.
That makes sense. I like how that's all so connected to the ideas of One Health and so connected to each other.
Yeah, I would say connection is a word I think about a lot. How does this activity connect to a consequence downstream? Does it in turn cause another consequence that we would be caring about from a human health perspective?
That makes sense. So I know you're an assistant professor in the Department of Natural Resources and the Environment. So I just wanted to ask a little bit more about the classes that you teach and a little bit about what those are like.
Yeah, I get to teach two great classes at UConn. One's Environmental Science, or NRE 1000, which is an introduction to environmental issues and approaches for addressing some of the problems. We cover things from the basics of ecology to conservation and biodiversity to human influence, including air and water pollution. This is an environmental literacy class. It's a large class, so we have a great breadth of students from across UConn from different majors taking that class. I teach that class every spring. A second class that I get to teach at UConn is ecotoxicology. This is NRE 4340, and there's a parallel graduate section, which the number for that is NRE 5340. And what's really fun about Ecotox is that I teach it through case studies where we think about a source of contamination, where it goes in the environment, the effects that it has, but all from these sort of, you know, published studies of environmental contamination problems that have been investigated for years. And so we are learning about basic concepts of pollution and the cycling of contaminants through the environment and the health effects of contaminants on biota or living organisms, all through the context of different case studies or sort of vignettes of where these problems have occurred in around the world.
That sounds great. Another thing that I wanted to ask you about was the research that you're involved in while at UConn. So I was just wondering if we could hear a little bit more about that.
Yeah, sure. So there are a couple of themes in my research program, a couple of main themes that the students and I work on together in the lab. One of the ones that's really picked up steam in the last couple of years that I've been at UConn is about the role that aquatic food webs play in the fate and toxicity of environmental contaminants. What's really compelling about that to me is we have in ecotoxicology, we've historically thought about contaminants as causing harm to animals, and that the animals sort of play this passive role. They're affected by contaminants, but they don't affect contaminants. I like to think about actually the flip side of that. How do they affect contaminants? And so when you start asking that question, you realize that food webs play a major role in which contaminants are taken up into the food web. What do they change into a different form that makes them more or less toxic? Do the animals move them around? So we think about food webs as kind of spatially constrained as a stream food web. And even there's quite a bit of movement because contaminants come into the base of the food web. They go through different food web steps. And then some of those steps, like emergent insects, can take those contaminants out of the stream ecosystem into the adjacent riparian or terrestrial ecosystem. And then on a much broader spatial scale, I've been doing some work about salmon biotransport. And so the role that Pacific salmon play and migratory fish more broadly play in taking contaminants from one area and moving them into an area that's way far away. So Pacific salmon are a great example of this. They accumulate most of their size as their biomass out in the open ocean and or in coastal systems off the coast of the United States. And they also accumulate the majority of their contaminant exposure out in the open ocean. And then at the end of their lives, they migrate back to freshwater systems where they spawn. And after they spawn, they die and they release all of those contaminants into those systems by one way or another. So that's been another really fun project.
I know you mentioned it with like describing your research, and I don't know if you explained it earlier, but what exactly is a food web?
Yeah, that's a great question. So food webs describe all of the relationships, really the dietary relationships in a given ecosystem. And so every kind of relationship between a predator and the prey that it consumes. And you can imagine that a predator eats lots of different types of prey, which is why we describe it as a web rather than, you may have also heard food chain. Food chain depicts sort of there's one predator and one prey in sequence, and a food web adds complexity to that understanding to recognize what are the diversity of prey that a predator eats and what are all of the things that the prey eat before the predator eats them.
That makes sense. And I can see how there's so many different components of your research, and especially things like food webs and animals and contaminants and things affecting each other. So my next question was going to be, how is your research and your classes kind of associated with One Health?
Yeah, and just to add to that, I try to have a lot of synergy between my research and teaching. And I think, as you say, there's quite a strong overlap with the broad framework of One Health. I bring my research experience into the classroom, and I look for opportunities to bring my classes into my research. And so it's really exciting to be working in that way.
So my final question is, what is one thing that you can suggest to students to make a positive impact in relation to One Health, or for students who might be really interested in One Health to become further involved with it?
Oh, that's a great question. The first suggestion that pops up in my head is find a reliable source of information, something that you can come back to time and time again, that is just exposing you to more examples about, you know, the impact that human activity can have on the environment and how that in turn impacts our health. One source of information that I really appreciate is the Environmental Health News newsletter, which is a publication of an organization called Environmental Health Sciences. You can find this at ehn.org. They also have a newsletter, so if you go to the webpage and subscribe, they will send you daily in the morning time a printout, like a collection of news articles related to environmental health. And I try and skim that every morning to just get a sense of, you know, what are the new examples? What are the new topics and stories about pollution and the relationship between environmental pollution and health, animal health and human health? And so through those stories, I just get more and more examples of connection, which is how I think about One Health in general. That newsletter is fantastic. And I will warn potential readers that there is kind of a lot of sad or bad news in that newsletter. The organization has a similar good news newsletter, and so they will also send you a listing or a collection of positive news stories in this space, so you can get a taste of, you know, things that people are doing or things that are working out in our favor.
Don't think I've heard of that before, so I think that's really a great resource for students to have.
The stories that are pulled together in that newsletter are from all over the world and every different type of ecosystem that you can think of. And I suggest to students at the beginning of the semester in both of my classes to subscribe to that. And we use that as a resource in the classes throughout the semester as well.
It sounds like a great resource. I think those are all the questions that I had for today. But I wanted to thank you very much for your time. I was able to learn so much more about your research and classes and your connection to One Health. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks again for inviting me. I enjoyed the conversation.
Thank you all for listening, and be sure to look out for more episodes of One Health, One Community.